the life story of Coretta Scott King, wife of Martin Luther King Jr., founder of the Martin Luther King Jr. Center for Nonviolent Social Change, and singular 20th century American civil and human rights activist, is a fascinating and important one. King has told her story for the first time toward the end of her life to Reverend Dr. Barbara Reynolds. Coretta's is a love story, a family saga, and the memoir of an extraordinary black woman in 20th century America, a brave leader who, in the face of terrorism and violent hatred, stood committed, proud, forgiving, nonviolent, and hopeful. Dr. Barbara Reynolds is an ordained minister, a columnist, and the author of several books, including Out of Hell and Living Well, Healing from the Inside Out, and it's a great pleasure to welcome her to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
I'm glad to be there.
Very nice to have you here. The name of the new book, My Life, My Love, My Legacy. How did you come to this project in working with Coretta Scott King?
Well, it happened in 1976. I was on assignment for the Chicago Tribune, and I had just finished a biography of Jesse Jackson, which people thought was not that flattering. And so when I asked for the interview, I was surprised that she wanted me to come, because some people, especially civil rights leaders at that time, were not so welcoming. You know, here's this young reporter who's going to expose the raw as well as, you know, raise up the good. So she said, come, you know, come to Atlanta. My life is an open book. Come here. Just tell the truth. And I met her and for the first time in the basement of a church where she was just getting started. And she had blueprints scattered around. And she was saying, well, the center will be here, and then there will be a walkway, and the crypt will be here. And I was just amazed at her vision, because I saw really nothing because I couldn't read blueprints. But she had a vision of just what would come to pass. And she worked to build that center. And, of course, from there, the holiday bill. So that all started in the 70s. And throughout the years, when I was an editor at USA Today, I would call her for interviews when she would have functions. You know, we began to be more like friends and more like a mentor to me. So it was a long journey with her until the end of the 90s, and they were looking for someone to do her memoirs, and she turned to me, and she said, why don't you do them? And I was thinking, wow, you know, why not do them? She's a hero to me, and a friend, and one of the most amazing personalities I've ever met in my life. So I said, well, why not me? Why not? And so that's how it began.
The two of you spent countless hours recording the tapes that became this book, which ultimately is the life of Coretta Scott King. And it is really something that's been told for the first time. I'm interested in your approach of how you began it. As you said, you started off in conversation as a conversation as friends. But how did that evolve, and how did that go into something where you were the journalist in you kicked in and asking the questions that, of course, are on our minds as readers and citizens?
Well, I was just with her, and see, I am a reporter. I was a reporter then, and I am a reporter now. And I'm also a minister, but I think about a reporter. I think about, here I am with this woman who at that time was regarded as the first lady of civil rights, married to the most sacred and spiritual and effective human rights leader of our time. So when I got a chance, I would ask her, you know, some of the tough questions. At that time, there were reports out, for example, that Dr. King did not honor his marital vows. So I waited until I thought she could answer that, and got her answer, because I knew I wanted to know, people wanted to know. And, you know, that's a very delicate question to ask anybody. Do you believe your husband is unfaithful? But I'm glad I asked her. Her answer is in the book. And she dealt with that. And she believed he was faithful. She had no reason to think he was not. And the reports that were swirling around, we have to understand it came at the same time when J. Edgar Hoover, the head of FBI, was trying to destroy Dr. King. And some of those reports were coming straight from the Hoover machine. So, you know, I'm glad. I wanted to find out what she thought about Abernathy, who at the in his book said some very unflattering things. And she answered that. So I had to get the tough questions from her, and I'm glad I did.
One of the things that I find so fascinating in your writing and in this book is how you separate and how she was even able to separate herself from that of her husband. And the difficulty that she must have had in doing that, of being so accomplished in her own right, but obviously being so linked to the iconic work of her husband.
Well, it was like a blending. There were things that she had to straighten out because she, you know, she was an accomplished concert singer. And in the 50s and around that period, she was raising funds for the movement through her concert series. And she had to, Dr. King at some point would ask her to fill in for him. In fact, she gave the first speech to start SCLC, and she had to balance that because she thought she was just supposed to be a concert. She knew she was chosen to make a difference in this world, but she thought it would be through her singing. And then she had to get a balance between being a spokesman, even while Dr. King was alive, and then raising her children. So it was always a difficult journey, but she was actually an activist before she even met King. She was active in NAACP at her college and in Antioch, which is in Yellow Springs, Ohio. She also challenged the school when they would not let her teach at Antioch and insisted that she teach at a segregated school in Xenia, Ohio, and she challenged that. So she did not come to Dr. King as a blank slate. She had a desire to make a difference in the lives of people, and she was already a faithful Christian, which also twinned with her husband. And as the years went by after his death, she knew what she had to do. She had to institutionalize and internationalize his legacy and be the architect of it. So she worked and struggled through those roles. And the main thing she had to do is have the courage not to leave. You see, her home was bombed in 1956. Right. During the Montgomery bus boycott, and she had her little two-week-old baby there when the porch was blown off. And Daddy King and her father, Obie Scott, demanded that she leave Martin and come home with the baby. And that's when she understood who she was, because she said, I won't leave him. I'm married to Martin, but I'm married to the movement. And that's when she really knew how strong she was, that she was actually stronger in a crisis.
Two of the big fights that you write about as a result of that being an architect of her husband's legacy, one, of course, is the work she did to bring the King Center to fruition. The other was the 15-year battle and lobbying to make his birthday a national holiday.
Yes, and I'm so glad you raised that question, because people have no idea what it takes to start something that had never been done for a man who was not a president of the United States to have a national holiday. It took gathering 3 million signatures. It took organizing a coalition of about 71 other organizations. It took the harmony and songs of Stevie Wonder, and to be able to deal with rejection, because the bill that was introduced by John Conyers of Detroit 16 times before finally it was approved. And so, you know, for someone to just work, she called on every senator in the Congress personally. She had learned how to lobby by trying to push through the Humphrey Hawkins employment bill, full employment bill. So she had to learn how to lobby. You know, she had to, in her mind, people were saying it could never happen. Nobody's going to have a king holiday. And she had to believe that it would happen. And what irked me probably more than it irked her, I got so tired of the media, and I'm a part of that, who would just call her the wife of or the widow of and not examine that she worked every day to build the center. She was also a spokesman. Just like today, the letter that she wrote about Jeff Sessions, who at that time was going to be appointed federal judge, she wrote a 10-page letter to oppose him. That letter is surfacing. She was not missing in action for causes. Wherever there was fairness, wherever there was injustice, she had a ministry of presence where she could be counted up to show up and be a moral voice. And if you think about this last 2 years, there's been a missing of moral voice that talked about that we should respect each other, that talked about the only way we can live as human beings is nonviolence through a prism of love, the lens of love, and to respect each other. And not that because you disagree, she always say you can disagree, but you don't have to be disagreeable. We have lost that moral voice of respect and honor of people who are born just because they are born in the image of God. 35,000 people are killed every year by guns. And we need to understand the way to resolve those issues is not to make laws to make sure we have more guns and more deadly bullets, to try to resolve people. Come together. Let's talk about it. Let's work it out. And if that doesn't work, let's confront the issue nonviolently. So that moral voice that she had, the voice of Dr. King, is missing. I hope that now people will read her book. And she said, I want people to see me, you know, because her husband's legacy is firmly established. The King Center is there. It still attracts world tourists. I was just there this weekend and saw people, just going into Ebenezer Church where Dr. King preached and was interned, and just sitting there. I mean, nobody was preaching. There was a tape playing, but just sitting in, trying, coming from all over the world, just trying to sit in here and through osmosis or some kind of spirituality, soak in what he meant and what she meant. But they were two people, but they really were one soul.
The name of the book is My Life, My Love, My Legacy by Coretta Scott King, as told to the Reverend Dr. Barbara Reynolds, who is our guest this morning. It's a great pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so much for sharing with us this morning.
Yes, and I loved your questions. It got me a chance to say some things I wanted to say. So thank you for having me.
Thank you very much. A great pleasure to have you on the program. Again, the Reverend Dr. Barbara Reynolds, the new book, My Life, My Love, My Legacy. It is published by Holt. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.